Okay.
Rocky, this is Kendi. I'm here, too.
Talk Radio.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Hello, welcome, everybody. This is Denny Griffin, and for the next half hour, I'll be your host on our debut program of Juror 13. And this is going to be a program this tonight and in future programs where we talk about what's going on in the world of the criminal justice system, cases that are in the public's attention. They can either be in the trial stage, pretrial stage, or investigative stage. They'll all be open for discussion. And before I introduce my panelists tonight, let me give you just a little background about Juror 13 and what it is. I became involved with Juror 13 through a mutual acquaintance. It is a website, and I will give you the URL, www.juror13, that's all spelled out, .com, www.juror13.com. And it's really a wonderful site if you go to it, and if you're a true crime buff or interested in true crime, because the cases that people are talking about are making the news, and others that are more obscure are on there. And there's updates about what's going on with the various investigations, cases, trials, and so forth. And there's also a chat room. And I've met some very wonderful people there, and I've learned an awful lot about what's going on currently in the newsworthy cases and so forth. And I have a couple of pet cases that I also get to talk about and share information. And, you know, usually on programs like this, you'll hear from professional pundits, commentators, lawyers, and so forth. And what we decided to do was get some of the chat room folks from Juror 13 who are very, very up to speed on these cases that they follow. And get away from the lawyers and the talking heads and have kind of regular folks who have an interest and follow true crime and follow these cases, let them share their opinions and their views on what's going on with us. And I think you'll learn just as much from them as you will from some of the pros. Now, what we're going to do tonight also is use the chat room user screen names of these folks. So it might sound a little funny, but if when you go to their site, when you visit Juror 13, which I hope you will, and get into the chat room, you'll have some idea who you're communicating with because you will recognize some of the names. Now, Juror 13 started after the first Phil Spector trial. There were a large group of interested people that had been watching and posting online about the case, and they wanted to stay in touch when the trial ended. One of them, a lady with the screen name of Chloe, C-L-O-E-Y, convinced her husband, who was also known as O Wise One, to put up a website where true crime buffs could keep abreast of ongoing investigations and trials. Juror 13 was born and has been growing steadily since. The group membership now stands at close to 700, and the site receives traffic from all around the world. So, now that you're a little bit familiar with Juror 13, my two guest panelists tonight, and I will introduce them, and then we will get into our discussion. First, we will use the name of Sprocket, S-P-R-O-C-K-E-T, and Sprocket will be talking to us in just a minute about the Phil Spector retrial. And we also have with us Kindy, K-I-N-D-E-E, and Kindy is going to talk about Black Widow cases. These are alleged female killers. And there are a lot of them alleged or convicted that we can talk about. So they'll be talking just a minute. And if anybody wants to ask either of my guests a question or make a comment, you can reach us at 646-478-0982. 646-478-0982. And I will try to remember to check the chat room periodically and see if there are any questions for us there. Okay, Sprocket, would you care to tell us about Phil Spector? Maybe you can give a little background, you know, from the first trial and kind of where we stand today.
Well, I attended about 80 to 90% of the first trial, and I have attended 100% of the second trial. And right now, we're very, very close to the end of the case. The prosecution rested their rebuttal case today, but we still don't know if the defense is going to put on a sir rebuttal case or not. If they don't, it looks like we're looking at closing arguments for next Monday.
Okay, so a week from today, we might be in the, might be with the jury.
Absolutely. Well, no, closing arguments are going to take probably anywhere from 2.5 to 3 days to present all of the closing arguments.
Oh, wow.
So the jury might get the case by the 25th, but I'm looking at even possibly more likely the 26th they might get the case.
Okay, and for anybody who's not familiar with Specter, could you tell us exactly what he's accused of doing and what happened his first time through the system?
Back in February of 2003, in the early morning hours of February 3rd, Lana Clarkson, a security hostess at the House of Blues Foundation Room, was found shot dead in Spector's castle-like home in Alhambra. And it wasn't until almost a year later that he was actually indicted and charges were brought against him. And we are now in the first trial ended in a mistrial, 10-2 for conviction, 2 voting for not guilty. And now we, after 5 months, we are nearing the end of the second trial.
Okay. Now, you've obviously been followed very closely, both trials, this one even more so. You've been there every day. Do you have any gut feeling about the strength of the case or the weakness of the prosecution's case this time as opposed to the first time?
I think the prosecution's case was presented a lot tighter. I think their cross-examinations went much better this time on many of the witnesses. Not to put anything against Pat Dixon, but I think Truck Joe has just, the new second chair, has done a marvelous job this time with the witnesses that she's presented and the witnesses that she's cross-examined.
So you're a little more impressed with the prosecution case this time through, huh?
Yes, well, there wasn't a lot of backstory problems. There wasn't the problem with Henry Lee. There, you know, a lot of other things that happened in the first trial were not brought into the second trial. So it was a much cleaner presented trial.
Okay, and Spocker, let me just, in the way of background here, for Juror 13, were you one of the original, well, I don't want to say founder, but the original group that participated with Juror 13?
I don't think I joined from the very beginning. I think I joined quite a few months later.
But you had met some of these folks when you were
yes.
all monitoring the trial?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Let me bring in for a minute our other guest, Kendi. Kendi, hi.
Hi.
Would you care to tell us a little bit about the Black Widows and exactly what you mean by that? And
well, I'd like to say hi to Sprocky because we did meet way back on the old court TV boards where I think a whole lot of the Juror 13 posters came from originally.
Okay.
So,
and hi back to Kendi.
We've never talked in person, but we've known each other for a long time, and I think that's the truth with a lot of the J13 posters, that we come from different places, but we all seem to have followed a lot of the same trials and now ended up in one place.
Yes, so, absolutely. You're absolutely right.
It's a perfect place for people like us, who some people think are nuts, but here we are on the radio, so who's nuts now? Well, we are, but yeah. Well, we all just, a lot of us, have been following the Rainella Dossett-Leith trial, and she has been called a Black Widow, and allegedly, she probably is one. So.
And well, what do they think she did? This is right.
Allegedly, her first husband was too full of morphine to have moved, but he ended up getting himself under cow hooves to die.
Hmm.
And
so he was trampled to death, Kendi?
No, I don't think he was. He had a print on him, but I don't think any of his injuries had anything to do with being stomped by a cow. So, and how he got there, nobody really knows because he couldn't move. He was terminally ill. He was very ill. He had a morphine pump in him. But even so, the amount of morphine would have killed, I think they said, a few men. So, but he got buried, and she got the insurance, which is usually the way it goes. And 6 months later, she married his childhood best friend. And he's the one whose trial we just followed, and he was shot suspiciously, and they tried to say it was suicide, but we all saw the crime scene, and none of us thought it was suicide. So, and that jury just hung.
So she's had two husbands meet the unfortunate end?
Yes, and she also was charged, and never went to trial, but she did cop to it, attempted murder. It was plea bargained down to something else. But, and I don't think she did any time for it either, but she shot at a guy 5 times, and the only reason he didn't die was because she said she was a bad shot, which she obviously is, and the sixth shot, whatever, was a blank, and he didn't die. So he lived to tell about it, which is the only reason that probably there's not 3 dead people in her past.
Okay,
or more.
She's been charged with a trial that just was hung. That was for the second husband?
Right. And they are going to maybe go for another trial for the first husband, but it was sort of hanging, so to speak, on what happened in this trial, and so we really don't know. They are going to retry. They said they are for this.
So she's not in the clear yet, then? She's still facing.
No, she thinks she is, but I don't think she is. I don't think they'll give up on her that easy.
And that brings up another point. We're not going to get into it. I don't know if we'll have time to get into it heavily tonight, but some of the things on this program in the future, in addition to specific cases or investigations or trials, I'd like to discuss topics. And one of the topics I'd like to get into, time permitting today, if not in a future date, is jurors and what we've been referring to as rogue jurors, the jurors who seem to have moved the standard a smidgen from evidence proof beyond a reasonable doubt to proof beyond any doubt. And, I don't want to get – that fires me up, so I'll say that for a little bit.
You know, lately I've heard so much a shadow of a doubt, and that's just insane because the other thing, I think the CSI effect could be a whole month of shows because
yeah.
I really do think that has infected, if not whole juries, then definitely jurors.
Yes, I agree. Let's finish up with go back to Sprocket here, back to Mr. Spector. Now, did you think, just your personal opinion, in the first trial, do you think even then that there was enough to convict him, or did you think a hung jury was appropriate?
Oh, I definitely felt, I've always felt from the very beginning that there was enough to convict him.
Yeah.
And what was very unusual about the hung jury in the Spector case was the fact that juror number 10, you had such unusual reasons for voting not guilty. And a couple of those reasons were is that he believed it was possible that Lana Clarkson, in a stranger's home, went rifling through the drawers looking for something to potentially kill herself with. He actually believed that and said that, and we learned that from juror number 9, who was very vocal with the press afterwards. And juror number 9 also told us that juror number 10 did not believe Adriana DeSouza heard what he heard. So those were when the evidence was overwhelming in my mind that there was enough circumstantial evidence and eyewitness hearing evidence to convict, he was still not convinced.
Oh, that's troubling.
Can I jump in here and say about the recent Black Widow trial? I hate that word, that term really, but I think it fits because they are ruthless in who they will kill and what they will do and how they will torture somebody. And it can be their own child. It just doesn't matter. They are really, it's kind of an insult to spiders. But at least the juror that we know, at least one that we know hung, said he or she needed at least several eyewitnesses in order to convict that little church lady.
And that goes to the point I was getting at a little earlier about some of these jurors. We have a caller on the line. Let's take the caller and see what the question or comment is. Hello, from area code 914. You're on the line. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a question for Kindy. Talking about the Black Widows, the Melanie McGuire case wrapped up some time ago, and her attorney, Joe Tacopino, seemed to have an interesting relationship with the defendant, if that's what you could call it. But what are your comments about that case and how ruthless and brutal that killing was?
Well, I bet I know who this is, Pri.
Kindy?
Anyway, yes. And in fact, when I was looking into typical Black Widows, they are so often nurses, like Melanie was, it blows your mind. I think, I don't know what's in her past, but I would be looking. I know she presented herself as a little Mary Sunshine in the clinic there, but I would bet there's some other stuff that happened in her life. So, absolutely. And also, the other thing about Black Widows is they don't look like they trap men, but somehow they do. So,
yes,
I don't know what's going on there. You look at them and you go, what are they seeing in her that she gets three or four men in a row, gets their insurance, and kills them off? So, absolutely, though, I think she probably is a really typical Black Widow. And what's going on with her and her attorney, that's a whole other show, I'm sure.
Tacopino, is he the same attorney that I associate with Johan Vandersloot?
Exactly.
Yes.
Okay. So, I've seen him in action on TV
yeah.
a couple times with Johan.
Yeah.
Or Johan, whatever it is. Okay, caller, did that answer your question?
Yes, it did. Thank you.
Okay,
great question,
Pri. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Bye-bye. So, as we were saying, there's a number of cases such as the Black Widow, what we're calling the Black Widow, but there's a whole
We have a brand new one coming up, this woman who has five husbands that she probably killed from early 1950s until just a few years ago, and probably one of her children, too. And they are just now onto her.
And she might have five notches on her belt, or six.
She probably does. Her name is Betty Newmar, and she's from that same little triangle in North Carolina and Tennessee and down into Georgia down in there that seems to churn them out.
Oh, baby.
Yeah.
Sprock, what do you think on celebrity trials have always been of interest to me to some degree in the sense of whether celebrities really play by the same rules or go through the same things as the common folks who go through people without their notoriety or perhaps the money. And I, like a lot of people, was really transfixed with the first O.J. trial, the murder trials in L.A.
Right.
And,
I watched that quite a bit, too.
And do you think... Well, obviously, there's no question that people with money are going to be able to afford the best defense. I mean, I guess that's obvious. But do you think even the case, there were some allegations at the time that perhaps Judge Ito was a little starstruck himself with all the cameras and the publicity and so forth. Do you think that if you have somebody with a name recognition or celebrity status, and I guess Spectre could go in there, do they get the same experience if they have to go through the criminal justice system as the rest of us get?
Well, they have to go through the criminal justice system. Whether their experience is the same as ours or not quite often depends on the strength of their legal counsel.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that, although I can't really say that the first trial ended because of the strength of the defense in that case, because I think the defense was just all over the map in the first trial, I definitely believe that Spectre has an even better defense this time with this one attorney that has been handling everything. It's hard to say. A lot of the talk out there on the internet is those of us out here in California, we have, you know, difficulty convicting a ham sandwich because all these celebrities are getting off.
Right. Spock, let me interrupt you just one second. We got a couple of callers waiting. Let's get to them before we lose them.
Sure.
caller from the 603 area code. You're on the air. Please go ahead.
Yes. Hi, Denny and Kindy and Sprocket.
Hello.
I was wondering if any of you read the article the American Bar Association put out about the rogue jurors. They are people who like to be picked to be on a jury just to hang it. We have been seeing a lot of hung juries lately, and two of the most ones that I can think of that really were, I think they had a rogue juror on them, was Orange Taylor, and the last one we just watched was Ronell Ellie's trial.
Yes, well, thanks to you, we did actually read that article. I think both of us, right, Sprock?
No, I've not had a chance to read it yet. I just got home from court a little bit ago. And
well, it's the American Bar Association one, right, Graham?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, well, you ought to read it, really. I think it's something that is just every trial now that we follow, no matter what, you cannot say that there's going to be a conviction because you do not know that there might not be one. I hate to say nut job, but that Orange Taylor juror, she was just a wacko. It was, they had a video of him going in and out of her dorm. and he had her secret Santa bag and other things that we all, you know, I don't really want to get into, but one person really did throw a whole bunch of police work just to the wind for what? You know, for what?
Yes, so. Yes, I know.
Crazy.
Yep.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. And we got a
You're
couple
welcome.
More, we got a couple of more calls. Let's move right to them. 813 area code. 813 area code. You're on. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks. This call is for the lady, the Black Widow lady. I'd like to know, you said earlier something about this little church lady. How does religion play into the whole Black Widow scheme?
Oh, that's
and
a good question.
I'll just hang up and listen. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Well, I think where they managed to pull it off has a lot to do with it. Bible belts, where they think women maybe aren't smart enough, clever enough, resourceful enough to pull it off. And also, they hide very well, just like Black Widows. I mean, you don't really expect them, and they hide until you dig them out. But there's a lot of things they have in common. They are Betty Crockers, usually, because they're caretakers. They have access to their victims. That's how they get the drugs into them. I think it just is such a red flag when you see somebody's had drugs being put into them against their knowledge for a while. Only a caretaker can do that. So that kind of thing, they just kind of hide, you know. And who's going to – I think this last jury really did look at her and think a little church lady with the church sitting behind her just could not possibly have done that. And they said without several eyewitnesses, and I'm not sure they would have believed that.
So she just didn't fit the image that people would need.
That's what a Black Widow – that's the first thing that pops up is she doesn't look like a Black Widow. They just don't. They look like everybody's grandma. Because by the time they get – and actually, they don't start killing until 35 or 40, around in there. So, I mean, they've got a lot of life experience behind them already, and they got that nursing degree. You know, so they've got their cover. They've got the church lady, nursing, caretaker cover.
You know, it's funny, you know, you mentioned that –
Allegedly.
Allegedly. You mentioned that these so-called Black Widows don't look like – that like killers.
That's the first thing that pops up. They don't look like what you expect them to. I say if they had, you know, tattoos all over them like people we sometimes see, that it would never have got to trial. But it comes out with this lady who's likely got at least three attempted murders under her belt, and somebody needs several eyewitnesses. It's just a whole different world.
When I was doing a while back, I did a couple of shows about child the sexual abuse and the pedophiles and so forth, and the guests I had indicated the same thing. I said, you know, are these people, these men, you know, where you're walking down the street and you look at one and you say, hey, he's one. You know, and,
right.
And no, it's like your Black Widows that just don't, they don't necessarily just by looks tell you.
And also they usually have, just like your child predators, many, many, many victims. Maybe not all of them died or whatever, but they're good at it. They've been practicing at it for a long time, and they actually try to achieve situations where they can victimize.
And remember,
they're good at it.
Remember, practice makes perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And if nobody gets you, I mean, this lady, allegedly, Rainella, she's still out walking. She only had a $25,000 bail anyway with all this under her belt. It's crazy.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, we got another caller. Let's see if area code 715. Area code 715, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello, Kindy, Sprocket, and Denny. This is
Hello.
Allegedly Love Law.
Hi, Love Law.
Hi, Love.
I kind of assumed the subject back to the jury. And I'm wondering, Sprocket, because you had mentioned strength of counsel regarding the Spector trial.
Yes.
And then Graham had called in regarding rogue jurors.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, I know that the system is designed so that the defendant, originally designed so that the defendant had 12 minds considering the evidence or lack thereof in some cases. And I'm wondering, with the relatively recent CSI effect, they call it, I'm wondering if you think it might be becoming unreasonable to expect that 12 people can come to a unanimous decision anymore.
Well, I think they can, because in at least the 9 other courtrooms, at least on the 9th floor where I've been for the past 5 months, they are getting convictions.
You do.
And, yes, I've just heard of, I believe, another trial right across the way in 108 that did get a, I think it was, I'm not positive, it might have been a double murder, and I think even Dateline did some filming on that trial, that they are getting convictions in other trials. We're just not really hearing about it so much.
Into the wrong trials, I think.
Maybe we're the problem.
That's what it is. But, yeah, we seem to be tuning into the trials that, you know, and we think we have these strong convictions that they're guilty. And then the jurors will look at all this and come back and hang, and you just have to wonder.
I think that kind of begs the question of what Danny was talking about. I think these killers or alleged killers who get a little notoriety, they are minor celebrities for a while, and they even, like Casey Anthony, managed to get really good attorneys, and you wonder who's paying for them.
Right.
So I think if a trial or a case gets enough local or regional or national attention, that defendant becomes a celebrity and has a better chance of somebody wanting to get on the jury who may have an agenda.
I agree. So I think it may – that was my thought, is if it versus strength of counsel versus rogue, it seems to me that it leans more towards the rogue juror and somebody being on a jury on purpose, you know, for
right.
that particular reason. So that was my thought, that I leaned more toward rogue, but I wondered what Sprocket thought too, having attended the trial, and we didn't have the we didn't get to see the Spector trial this time. So I was wondering what she thought of the strength of counsel versus and the jury and how she felt.
It's a very good question, but you don't really know if you have a rogue juror until maybe after they've already hung the trial, you know?
Right.
I mean, that's part of the problem is you don't really know. The only thing you can do to try to prevent that is do the best job possible in voir dire.
Yeah.
Voir dire, voir dire.
I attended the Binion trial, and I know Kindy will remember this, but I saw a juror that I could tell. I knew that if on that second trial that if she was found not guilty – I mean, I
could tell where she was looking. I asked Lovelaw to look at the end of the jury and see who she was looking at, and oh, yeah.
Yeah,
she hooked somebody.
There was a guy there that was all gaga, and, you know, so sometimes you can tell, and I didn't know you sitting there if there was anybody that you could actually read that they might be leaning one way or the other.
There are several jurors that I believe that I just get an inward sense that are leaning towards guilt. That's for certain. I watch the jury when they file past Spector every day, and they don't look at him. They don't give him any notice when they're exiting the courtroom.
Oh,
so, okay. I mean, so it's little things like that. This jury is pretty tired of this testimony. They've been there in that courtroom for almost, you know, 5 months now. A couple more days, it'll be 5 months.
Are you kidding me?
No,
five
I'm not.
Months?
That is unbelievable. Unbelievable. Wow. Well, I don't want to take up any more airtime. I want somebody else to get to call in. But there was another thing, too, that just maybe for another show or to talk about if somebody else was interested. We talked about looks and getting past looks. And you had mentioned that Rainella didn't look like a killer.
Right.
And sometimes that has an effect. But then I wondered,
it always has an effect, I think.
Yeah, and then in the reverse effect of the boy that we just watched on trial, I can't remember his name, but had the tattoos.
Right.
So, I mean, sometimes you can have that reverse effect where if you look bad,
James Bearden,
right.
Yeah.
That was it. So, anyway, I'm going to hang up now. I hope somebody else can call in. It was nice. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you very much for the call.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, and we have one more caller on the line, and I just want to tell everybody we've run out of time, so the live stream has ceased, but what the next caller and whatever said will be in the archived show, so we're not going to lose this, even though we lost the live stream. Caller from 856, you're on the line. Go ahead, please.
Hi, my name is Josie, and I live in New Jersey. I was quite familiar with the Melanie McGuire Black Widow case where she murdered her husband.
A nurse you are.
yes, and that held my interest, believe me. And she was sentenced in 2007. The murder took place in 2004. Now, I am really confused as to why she hasn't been stripped of her parental rights. The two young children are in the care of the victim's family, and I understand they're doing very well. They've been there for 4 years now when Melanie was arrested in 2005. And my question is, since this is the case that more than any other I was very involved with because I live not far from where everything took place, and I am questioning, I understand the reason why the convicted killer, who's not eligible for parole until she's like 102, that she hasn't been stripped of her parental rights because she's going to be appealing, but doesn't everyone appeal? Is that normal? Someone said, well, this is high profile. She had Joe Tacopino as her lawyer. So I just kind of, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, at some point, the kids are going to be old enough to go to college. And is this normal that when somebody's convicted of a heinous putting your husband in three suitcases kind of situation, and that's the children's father, and they are in the care of someone else, lovely family, wouldn't there be a law that says you have to strip her of her parental rights so that they can feel, the children can feel like they're in a normal environment? I don't understand. What is the normal procedure when it's a life sentence for a convicted black widow? Is it a state-to-state individual situation, or do you know anything about that?
I don't know anything about that, and I didn't really follow the Melanie McGuire case. Kendi, do you have anything? Any thoughts on that?
Josie, how old are the kids now?
The kids are seven and 9 years old.
Wow.
And I understand they are in therapy. Everything's going well with I didn't hear that.
Did we lose somebody? Did I lose somebody?
I don't
I'm
know,
sure.
But I'm still here. Something about a cue I heard. Any case, I just wondered about that aspect.
Well, I don't know. What's your experience there? Because I'm not anywhere near the East Coast. What do you think?
Well,
to me. I hope it isn't normal.
You know, I've watched like 23 million Snapped episodes, and I've always heard at the very end, children are now in the custody of father's family or what have you, and I just thought automatically that the parental rights by the one who did the murder would have been stripped away, although I understand through a third-hand party in this case, well, it is high profile. And even though she's declared indigency, maybe they're going to drag this out until she gets her first appellate hearing. And I just kind of think, wow, that's kind of crazy. She killed their father. Why would they wait until the appellate? I mean, it was such an open and shut case that she put her
husband. See, that's the weird thing. She killed their dad, so why is there even a question about who she
happened? There is a question about that. Of course, her family, certainly, and they're still being investigated as accomplices, but
right.
Yeah, they have their own board, and of course, as far as they're concerned, the one who helped bring Melanie to justice, which was the victim's sister, who has the children, they feel she really killed her brother. And I just kind of like thought, wow, they're getting a little crazy on that score.
Wow.
But I just kind of wondered to myself, did anybody know what's the usual protocol when someone is a lifer, when it's real obvious that they probably will lose any and all appeals because the case is so obvious, wouldn't you think that this would be an open and shut case? And if not, why is there such a time lag? I just wondered if anybody had heard that.
Well, I have some thoughts as you were talking about this. And these decisions of parental rights would be decided in family court. It would
Absolutely.
Not have it wouldn't have anything to do with the criminal court.
Yeah,
right.
I was going to say that there's nothing automatic about it, about her losing the rights. It would still have to go through, jump through every hoop that you would have to if you weren't in jail.
Yeah, it appears that that is the case. But now that you know, the kids have been in the deceased father's family's care for, let's see, since June of 2005 when the mother first got arrested, I thought, wow, that's like 4 years now, and they're getting older, and they certainly like where they are. So I did think to myself, gee, at what point does somebody think of what the children's best wishes are,
mm-hmm.
and give them a normal, you know, oh, this is where you're going to be until you go to college? You know, it just seems so odd to me, and I'd love to see some reform. You know, I really would love to see some reform in this area. I had no idea that
Well,
if
I
you...
think that's a whole other show. I mean, that could be a whole show, because
yeah,
I do wonder
I
that.
Think it could be. It definitely could be, because before...
We follow a lot of trials where the husband kills the wife or the wife kills the husband, and there's always some big fight about, like the Jensen trial. Those boys
yes.
end up with the stepmother.
Yes, yes. And
I never felt good about that.
No, I didn't either. And there are cases now when you look at, you know, how the agencies having to do with the state, they come in and they check everything out and they decide the children are in a perfect environment. But apparently, since it was a high-profile case with this Joe Tagapino that went national, now you have some sort of pressure to just wait it out and see where that first appeal goes. At least that's what I had heard. And I thought, that's not fair to the children. Doesn't anybody, isn't there a guardian ad litem that would, like, you know, just be in the best interest of the children? And I first kind of thought about that with the Anna and Nicole Smith, who gets the baby. And I thought they dragged that out way too long.
Yes, they did.
I do think, you know, this is something to look at when a spouse kills the other spouse. Who gets the kids? Who decides? How long does it have to take?
Yeah, and that would depend on family court, probably in each different county of each different state. You know,
mm-hmm.
it might even go down that far. I mean, it's definitely on a state level, you know, and depending on the judge, if the judge is willing to listen to the mother's appeal. You know?
I guess that's what it will come down to. But in closing, I have to let you know, most of us nurses in New Jersey do let our patients live, do let our husbands live. we're really good people in New Jersey. We may be a little densely populated, but we're pretty fine people. Thanks so much for taking my question.
Hey, good
Josie,
to see you,
you,
girl.
Thank you.
Take care, Josie.
Thank you, sir.
Oh,
thank
bye-bye.
You.
Sprack and Kindy, we ran about almost 10 minutes over our time. Like I said, the last 8 or 9 minutes, whatever, here will be on the archive shows, but we did lose the stream at about 8 to 9 minutes ago. But I want to thank you very much for being on. It was really fun, and I can't believe the time went so quick. And
I knew it would.
Hopefully you'll do it again in the future.
We barely got started.
Okay. I'm going to head over to the G13 chat room and see what kind of critique we got.
Yeah,
okay.
Me too.
Okay.
See you there.
Thanks
bye-bye.
A lot. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, folks, that was the debut show of Juror 13, and hopefully we didn't have enough time, obviously, but hopefully we've got into some areas that are of interest to people, and when we do the next show, I hope you all tune us in again. Thank you very much, and have a great night. Bye-bye.